I'm Chris Harwood. This is live from Studio A. We're happy to have back in the studio Gordon Thorne, who's been in the studio a couple of times, I think, with us in the past, both as a solo artist and also with Bob Bingham. And back when they were Bingham and Thorne, and I don't know if you've been in the studio with us with other groups as well, if it's just been...
I might have long ago with another group that from up north, but I can't remember if we came in here or not. I'm not sure. But
yeah. Well, it's great to have you back.
It's nice to be here.
You've got a gig going on now Monday nights at Sarah's Table, Chester Creek Cafe in the Wine Bar.
Yes, which is a little residency I've established there. It's working out well. Monday nights from 6 to 8.
I suppose as a solo artist, it's an intimate room. So
nice small room, yeah. It's nice and it's got good acoustics.
That used to be the... the produce section,
right?
Back
yeah.
when it was Terrence Market,
I can turn into a vegetable in there quite easily.
I'm sure a lot of people could. That's great. Well, it's wonderful that you've got that gig going on. We can talk a little more about that in a sec, but I'd love to start off with a song if we could.
The tune, okay. Let's see. We'll go here. We'll do a little Big Bill Brunsley tune. I got bricks in my pillow, baby, and my head can't rest no more. I got bricks in my pillow, baby, and my head can't rest no more. I got me a spider on my wall and a black snake on my floor. I got mud in my water, baby, and it's drifting all in my teeth. I got mud in my water, baby, and it's drifting all in my teeth. I got bugs down in my bed, and they keep on biting me. I got holes in my pockets, I got great big patches on my pants. I got holes in my pockets, baby, great big patches on my pants. I'm way behind on all my house rents, that's why I gotta pay now in advance. I feel like walking, baby, and I feel like laying down. I feel like walking, baby, and I feel like laying down. I feel like getting drunk, but there ain't no whiskey around. I see that train a-coming along, man, and I hear that whistle blow. I see that train a-coming, and I hear that whistle blow. I feel like leaving, baby, but I got nowhere to go.
Gordon Thorne, live from Studio A. Big Bill Brunsley song. Which one is that called?
Bricks in my pillow. Yeah, Bricks in my pillow, I believe it's called.
Didn't Lead Belly have something?
Yeah,
Grasshoppers in my pillow.
Grasshoppers in my pillow shares the same, many of the same traveling verses. I think Blind Lemon Jefferson used a few verses from that.
I'm sure they were.
They just got passed around.
Yeah, they sure did.
I liked what Willie McTell, that's what he called them, traveling verses. You know, you had songs that you made up. that had no traveling verses, and then there were songs that they wanted you to record one more blues, and so you just pulled the traveling verses down and made up whatever song you wanted to. On the,
I think
on
that,
the spot.
That explains half of Joe Turner's career, Big Joe Turner, What Did I Say by Ray Charles was sort of just a bunch of those traveling verses thrown together, and but to great effect,
Because you got to think on your feet, and you're just kind of pulling them down. They're all up there, and you're basically in a recording studio, I think, and you're playing it barroom style,
right?
You're just doing it.
Well, the gig at the bar is over, and you still got another 15 minutes on the contract. You got to find some more songs in the catalogs to start, putting things together. But Brunzi, of course, was so prolific. I mean, years and years of making records.
Unbelievable.
But, yeah.
I mean, I love Big Bill. I love the way he sang. I love the way he was a reserve guitar player. He played. He rarely showed you what he could really do.
I like that term, a reserve guitar player. Right.
He would lay down a groove, and he just knew that it was about the groove. You don't have to be fancy, because he could play some fancy guitar, But he really opted not to most of the time, and to play just a solid.
Well, and he often had songs that I felt were the lyrics were actually in some cases really important, like Black, Brown, and White. You think, well, you don't want to get the guitar in the way of stuff like that.
No, especially as he got older, his guitar really started to get out of the way, and unless he was going to play an instrumental, then he would just really chomp at it and lay it down. He was something else.
I was going to ask you about who your influences are, and it's great that you started off with Brunzi, but I'm thinking about just Minnesota guitarists too. Did you hang out with Dave Ray much?
As a matter of fact, Dave and I got to be great buddies in a surreptitious manner. His wife, Mary Jane, and I were great friends, and they ended up getting married, and so I got to know Dave through her. But I never let on to the fact that I was a huge fan of his,
I always felt like he was a guy who didn't want to know.
because he was a heavyweight, man. Yeah. And so I didn't want him. I just let him. He knew I played a little guitar, but he didn't know kind of what I was up to. Right. But we saw a lot of each other through his wife,
Yeah. He always seemed to kind of downplay, he didn't want the adulation, really.
No,
he wasn't a spotlight kind of fan.
Right.
So.
He was a quiet, he was quiet that way. And so anyway, it was really funny because so time passes and we get booked on a show together, right? And I'm doing a front set for him.
Time to throw down.
It's a live radio show.
Okay.
And so I show up at the gig and he's there and he kind of looks at me and, oh, I didn't know you were on the gig, and good to see you again, what have you. And you guys go, oh, so you're going to do a little picking and grinning. He had never heard me play, right?
Uh-huh.
And so I go play my set, and he's sitting in the side, and I come off, and he looks at me, and he gives me the WTF, man. I mean, What do you mean? You do this, And ever since then, we became great friends. We played a ton of gigs together at the end of his life.
Well, I was worried for a minute there that he thought he couldn't follow up, because...
No. He followed up just fine.
Okay. Well, but what a great honor, though, that he appreciated what you were doing.
Because those guys, when I was learning how to play guitar, I went and watched John Kerner and Dave Ray and Dave Hull play all the time.
Yeah.
Because they were playing in all the local bars in Minneapolis, and I just moved there and decided that it was kind of something I was interested in, and I watched these guys play, and I'm like, this is, they were solo guys. They weren't playing with a band. They just were solo guys that could go stomp it out, and they were great,
But they did collaborate, but of course, the Kerner and Glover albums, you think it's a trio, but there's only about two or three songs in every record where they're all playing together.
Right. Most of the time, they're just kind of doing their own thing, and they threw it together. They were just they were almost like a minstrel show, a little three-man minstrel show where everybody kind of had their own thing.
Right.
And Tony could float in and play with both.
Right. If needed, I'll play with you.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you of course had a long time duo with Bob Bingham.
Yeah.
But that, you were telling me just before we went in the air.
Yeah, Bob decided about 2 years ago, he called me up, almost 2 years to the day, he called me up and said that he was going to retire from music. He was just really getting to be frustrated he's in his mid-70s now, and he was just getting frustrated with the fact that you know, there were too many young people that were getting paid the same as us and hadn't really paid their dues, and it was easy money to be made up where we live, but everybody's making the same, and it just frosted him to the point where he lost a lot of love for the game, so to speak.
Well, I can respect that.
Yeah, me too. I definitely do too.
At the same time, you know, I love that you can get a gig when you're not, you know, some international headliner. You can still play. There's still places to play.
I love it.
You know, I guess it does have to kind of come down to maybe that kind of decision. Is this sort of journeyman playing something that I want to keep doing for a while?
I don't mind if I get, I'll go play at Lutzen Resort, for instance, in Lutzen, Minnesota. And I'll play there once a month, every third Saturday. And I love that gig because it's a hotel lobby piano gig, except you're playing guitar.
Yeah.
You know, you're in the background, and people drop by, and it's almost like being a street musician. They cruise by, listen for 10, 15 minutes, and they're gone. You're not playing in a bar, and you're not playing a concert, but you're definitely playing in a nice, quiet environment, and it allows you to play anything that's in your bag. You play bar gig, sometimes the rags are not suited for the gig, mm-hmm. you know, and so you... At the Lutzen gig, you can play anything you got in your bag, and it will work.
You point out you've got a different audience every 15 minutes.
Right.
So it's not like you have to take them from point A to point Z.
You can just kind of say, oh, you know, I feel like doing this now. And you don't really – you can be very interruptive kind of in your set because you don't have them – they're not sitting there for an hour and 15 minutes where you have to take them on some sort of a journey, you know.
Yeah.
And so it was very fun. So he just kind of dropped out because he didn't really like that much.
No,
you know.
Well, he'd obviously been doing it for some time.
He liked to electrify people. he did, you know. That was his bag.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
And he certainly did it for a long time.
Oh, so. he was unbelievable guitar player.
So
unbelievable.
Speaking of guitars, and speaking of Dave Hull, you mentioned your guitar is a Dave Hull guitar.
This is a Dave Hull copy made by a guy named Dale Fairbanks in Connecticut, and just a beautiful guitar. It's a copy of a Gibson J30, and so it's a little slope shoulder thing, and it's just a marvelous guitar. I've had it for about 5 years, and it even got stolen from me once, and I got it back.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it got stolen from me.
Huh. Well, now you were playing smaller body guitars in the past, which is a nice intimate sound, but this is a bit boomier, but it's not by any sense brash.
No, definitely not. It still contains itself, but it's got so much more. It just got a bigger bottom, you know. And once I got a hold of it, I was just like, whoa, this is just, you know, you can play some big, you know, it just sounds a little bigger, you know.
Yep.
It's nice.
Well, let's hear another song.
Okay, let's do... speaking of Bob Bingham, I'll do you a tune that he and I kind of wrote together, and he made a record called New Ground, and this is the title track from that record that...
All right, Gordon.
He wrote most of the lyrics, and I kind of came up with an instrumental approach for it.
Wonderful. Gordon Thorne here on KMD.
Let's see. When I left my home, Mama told me don't be long. So I packed my grip and quickly walked away. I've been too long in this town, I'm headed for new ground. But I'll be back to visit one fine day. I got this gypsy blood in me, I'm a traveler, don't you see? The road goes on and never ends. I've been too long in this town, and I'm headed for new ground, but I'll be back to visit one fine day. I'm running, jumping, baby, I ain't standing still. Ain't coming back, man, I never will. I'm gonna point my wheels into that setting sun. Baby, you know darn well that I was born to run. I ain't gonna stay put no matter what you say, but I'll be back to visit one fine day. That town has gone to hell and nowhere. Long before she caught my eye, But love grows cold and living just gets old. I'll be back to visit one fine day. Ain't jumping, baby, ain't standing still. Ain't coming back, girl, you know I never will. I'm gonna point my wheels into that setting sun. Baby, you know darn well that I was born to run. Yeah, I ain't gonna stay put, no matter what you say. And I'll be back to visit one fine day. I ain't gonna stay put no matter what you say, but I'll be back to visit one fine day. I ain't gonna stay put no matter what you say, but I'll be back to visit one fine day.
Gordon Thorne here on 103.3 KMD. That's a Bob Bingham song. Yeah. Is that, and that's one that, did you play that with him a lot? Or you,
no,
so did you
no,
put your
no,
own?
No, I actually play it quite differently than he plays it. We performed it a few times. It was kind of at the end of things, but I just loved that song. And we kind of penned it together, and I showed him a few guitar tricks on there. But he timed it a little differently. And then one night somebody asked me at a gig if I could play some Jerry Reed tune, and I said no, but I could play you this, and I kind of tried to Jerry Reed it up as much as possible. And I just kind of, that's how it came out, and I've been playing it kind of that way for the last couple of years, you know.
That seems to be a faster tempo than a Jerry Reed, typical Jerry Reed song, you know, which is kind of, or I'm thinking Jimmy Reed, I'm sorry.
Jerry Reed, you know, the guitar,
right.
The guitar monster.
I was confusing
right.
with Jimmy Reed. Definitely.
Jimmy.
That's something entirely different,
right. Jimmy, he liked a little slower groove.
A little bit. Well, that's great. You guys played together quite a bit, and after he decided to call it quits. But you've done solo gigs all through. You weren't locked together.
No, because he was only a seasonal denizen to the Northwoods. He came. He had a cabin in Isabella, so he would come up in May, and we'd start playing gigs, and we'd play all summer. And then if some festival in Seattle wanted to have us, he would fly from Florida, I'd fly from here, and we'd meet there, and we'd play the gig and go home, you know, split ways on the airport and come back to our homes, you know. And so we did a little of that for a while too, but for the most part we just played in the seasonally, you know, from May till October or so.
But you perform as a soloist, of course, as you do at Sarah's Table now on Monday nights, but you've also you've played with other people as well. I think it was Ulschmidt.
Jimmy Ulschmidt, played quite a bit with him. Yep. And he's over in Sheboygan now.
Okay.
And actually tried to call him the other night, and his phone, he's changed his number or something, so I hope he gets back to me. And I also play with a piano player from up north named Chris Gillis quite a bit. He's his dad was a phenomenal Jelly Roll Morton type style piano player.
Wow.
And Chris is no slouch either. He's an older fella also. And he can really get around. So we play quite a few gigs together.
Now, do you have to tailor your guitar playing to a piano differently than to another guitar?
Yeah. I play quite a bit differently. I like the piano to be the main source of sound. Guitar, I like the guitar. Like if you listen to, I think that if you could listen to like Big Bill or Blind Blake or any of those guys when they were playing with piano players, the recordings don't necessarily give you the sound that they are trying to accomplish, because sometimes the piano sounds thuddy and in the background, sometimes it sounds way out front. But
right.
I do believe that the guitar was supposed to sit under the piano, not on top of the piano. And then be allowed by the piano player to come through every once in a while as more of a featured thing, but really to let the piano player be the
I think about those, like those Charlie Christian recordings where if he's going to solo, then the band's got to kind of lay out a little bit.
Right.
Because, of course, back then they couldn't amplify.
Exactly.
They couldn't mic as well.
And so that's kind of the same thing. Having And where Pat Donahue really kind of informed me on that. He, you know, when he would play with Butch Thompson, you realize that Pat's guitar playing wasn't what it was about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though it was stellar in the background, buried kind of beneath this great piano. I mean, you weave them together, but it's when you're playing alone, solo guitar, you're really, you can do anything you like.
Well, when he was playing with the guys also Shoe Band on Prairie Home all those years, I mean, those five guys had to learn to pass it around a bit because you had a pianist and a sax player and a guitarist who all had game. And so, but as you say, you got to kind of figure out how to get out of the way of whoever's taking the solo.
Exactly. And when you play solo a ton, you start to forget that a bit because you're allowed it. You can do whatever you like. And you're the man all the time.
That's
true.
Well, but there's nobody to blame too.
Right.
Else to blame if something goes wrong.
Right.
It's like,
exactly.
Well, I dropped my own four bars by mistake. Right. It's good though. It's neat that you're playing the piano player too.
Yeah, it's really fun. And then I also play every third Thursday. There's a great drummer up in Grand Marais that moved there from New Orleans. He's a retired doctor who grew up in New Orleans, and he's a phenomenal drummer. Hmm. And so I play with him and an upright bass player the third Thursday of every month at the Gunflint Tavern.
You seem to cover the entire northern...
Yeah, so I play electric guitar in that game.
All over the state you go.
It's fun.
So,
it's fun, yeah.
Is that do you get to the western corner of the state? Is
no,
it just the
no, I rarely get south of Hinckley.
You're not up in War Road or...
No, not... I used
Rosa.
To travel there when I was coaching hockey, but that's it.
So by day, are you? You're not a guitarist by day.
No, I'm not. I was a builder. I'm still building, but that was my career. I built homes as a career, and now I'm in a state of semi-retirement. I'm not going to build a home for anybody but me. If I build one more, it'll be for me.
There you go.
But still doing a lot of work for people, for clients that we built homes for over the last 20 years.
Going back and tweaking something if they wanted to.
But then we don't have to be on a job for a year and a half.
Yeah, that's, you know. The nothing wrong with boutique carpentry.
Right, it's very nice.
Yeah,
it's
semi-retirement,
and,
as you
and,
say.
You know, and I've, that's something that's a skill I've had my whole life, and it's just a, so it, I can work, 120 days a year type thing.
Hmm. And I think about the surgeons who are afraid to shake hands too firmly or do anything with their hands that could threaten, you know, their game. I worry as a carpenter. Did you ever think you're going to smash your thumb and there goes?
I cut my thumb almost off one time.
Oh no!
You know, Tim Sparks used to laugh at me because I used to go change his oil because he wouldn't get his hands near anything with grease on them because it would, you know, and he'd pay me he would give me guitar lessons to change the oil in his car. Because he was so meticulous about his hands, you know, he just wouldn't let him get anywhere near anything.
Yeah, and I've seen guitar players who've got the nail files out, and all the stuff to kind of strengthen everything. But.
Well, I finally went to I just to Lynn at Pearl Nails. I'll put a plug in for her. She does my nails the acrylic nail is the. It's unbelievable. It changed my whole guitar playing style.
But do you flat pick ever, too? I mean, or is it just it's all finger style?
All finger picking. And I can kind of emulate a flat pick finger picking, you know, by playing single notes. But, you know, I'm not much, never was much of a flat picker.
Huh.
Yeah.
Where'd you pick it up and where'd you learn? Who just listened from the records?
Yeah, I just really learned from records. You know, I hate to admit it, but I was way pre-YouTube.
Yeah.
You know, and so... Yeah, I had a stack of Yazoo records, man, and I just put them on, and you know, you had to learn how to filter through the...
Right, that's the mother source there. You know, why not, you know, why listen to somebody who listened to that, who listened to that? Go back to the source materials, what you've done.
Yeah, so. And that's, you know, and everybody has their own way they like to get around it, but it's funny because... If I hear a guitar player say I'm out somewhere and there's a guy playing guitar and he plays what he'll call a Reverend Gary Davis tune out or something, and I can say, "Oh, you mean you're listening to you're making a take off Jorma Kaukonen's take off that?"
Right.
And so really, you're really not playing like Reverend Davis at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's unfortunate you didn't just go right back to the source once Jorma gave you the doorway in, go back and. Dig up the...
That is a question I've always wanted to talk with people about more and more because I feel like you know, when you rarely hear a cover, I my opinion at least, and I'm going to step up on my soapbox for a second, you rarely hear a cover that's as good as the original. The original obviously inspired them to make the cover, but the original, there are a couple of exceptions. Right, and I think Aretha Franklin and maybe, you know, Joe Cocker or something made some records that topped the originals. But the source material. And and aren't we lucky that I think the CD age came along at just the right time to save all that stuff that was really fragile from a century ago.
Because the record, you know, I mean, I like I say, I had it all on record. Records and now I don't even have it on tape and on CD. I don't listen to that stuff that much anymore, except unless it's on a radio show or something like that. Like we were talking earlier, I don't listen to that too much. And I also found that, you know, over the years, I mean, there was a time when I could play like Blind Blake if I really wanted to. I could almost play it note for note. But I don't even care to try that anymore. I don't want to do it. I want to play it like me, you know. But all his techniques have informed my playing because I did learn them.
Yeah.
You know, I learned how he did his how he did his little drop thumb thing, and I could get it, so I could employ those techniques. But I really want to also employ, you know, I don't want to just sound like Blind Blake. I love the way Willie McTell played. I love the way, you know, millions of players played.
You know, there are a lot of artists that you wish they would grow beyond who their obvious heroes are.
Right.
You know what I mean? But Ray Charles sounded like Nat King Cole for 3 years before he finally found his own voice. The Beatles sounded like the Everly Brothers and Elvis, Chuck Berry and Richard.
But then they have to, because that's part of the that's how you step through it.
But then they grow and they add their own touch on all of that.
And so then you become your own stylist. Yeah. I mean, really, that's what I call all those guys are stylists. You know. You, and John Koerner to that point is a stylist. Nobody, when you hear Koerner's guitar playing, when I hear it, I don't have to hear his voice at all. I can go, that's John Koerner playing guitar. Nobody plays guitar like that.
But you know, he doesn't play like he played 40, 50 years ago either. You know,
no,
he kind of changed his style.
But he's got. There's a certain thing that is in your DNA. It's like people will say that about my guitar playing. It's you can tell. It's me. If you've listened to me, you know I like to do this kind of thing, and I kind of throw it in backwards and sideways, and but it's still the same trick. It's just kind of, you know, you only got 5 or 7 tricks, and you just jumble them around, and they sounds like you got 100 of them.
I suspect you've got more tricks than 5 or 6, but that's fine. let's hear one more song. We got Gordon Thorne in our studio now, and just to remind people, he plays Monday nights at Sarah's Table, Chesapeake Cafe.
Come on down. It's a lot of fun down there. I'm gonna put a shout out to my buddy Tommy Watruba. I gotta give him a call and see if he wants to come sit in with me sometime. And
there you go.
Paul Jones comes and sits in with me quite a bit from play Steel with the Fish Heads, and we've known each other a long time. And so it's just a nice little place. Every once in a while, there'll be somebody else joining me down there. Yeah.
So it's not always just a solo gig.
No.
So it's a surprise each week. You never know.
Right.
Good deal.
So let's see. I'll finish it off with. I'll do a. An old, we'll see if you in Radioland if you can guess what this is. Some whistle blowing, see them sparks fly from the track. That's a train my gal left on this morning when she said she won't be coming back. Can you see that dirty engine smoking as it fills up the sky with clouds of black? Man, I knew my baby wasn't joking when she said she won't be coming back. Lonesome train, a lonesome train. You took my baby rolling round the bend. Lonesome train, oh, lonesome train. Can't wait to see her smiling face again. I went down to the station, started crying as I watched that special roll away. And I knew my baby wasn't lying when she said she's gone away to stay. Lonesome train, oh, lonesome train. You took my baby rolling round the bend. Oh, lonesome train, oh, lonesome train. Can't wait to see her smiling face again. I went down to the station, started crying. So I watched that special roll away. And I knew my baby wasn't lying, Lord, when she said she's gone away to stay. Lonesome, lonesome. Lonesome train, oh, lonesome train. Wait to see her smiling face again. I went down to the station, started crying as I watched that special roll away. And I knew my baby wasn't lying, Lord, when she said she's gone away to stay. I knew my baby wasn't lying when she said she's gone away to stay. When she said she's gone away to stay.
Gordon Thorne here, live from Studio A on 103.3 KMD. So, Lonesome Train Blues.
Lonesome Train.
But who's the artist?
That was Eddie Hinton recorded that song. It was a Muscle Shoals guitar player.
Okay.
And then it threw Leo Kottke's Last Steam Engine Train to get it kicked off.
There was a little bit of a Kottke influence in the playing.
Yeah, a little Kottke thing in the beginning.
There are several Lonesome Train Blues. I couldn't pick that one out. But then there's like a country Lonesome. Was it Hank... I can't remember his name now, but Hank Penny.
Oh, Hank Penny.
Yeah, and then there's, I think Big Joe Williams probably did a Lonesome Train.
Well, yeah, and you know, this one, Linwood Slim used to sing this song.
Okay.
All the time. And he had that guy was a great singer. I loved Linwood's style back, bless his soul. And so that's another Minneapolis connection type of thing.
Yeah.
That was a standard in his repertoire. It's a standard in mine now. I love that song.
Well, I'd say it's a treat that you're in northern Minnesota because, you know, the acoustic blues scene in Minneapolis has been strong for half a century, but it's wonderful to have you in this neck of the woods.
Yeah, I've lived up here for 40 years, and Finland is my home. That's where I'm going to stay, and as long as I can find a little place to play, a little corner somewhere, I'm happy as a clam.
Well, that's great. Well, I hope you won't be a stranger. Come back here more often.
I'd love to have you play. And don't forget, people out there, come on down to the Sarah's Table. Nice little wine bar down there. It's a great setting, and I'd love to see anyone down there.
Gordon Thorne on Monday nights right here in Duluth.
Enjoy the snow, people.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
This is live from Studio A, produced by Christine Dean. I'm Chris Harwood. Thanks to Emma Gilhausen as well. Funding provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Gordon Thorne, live from Studio A this afternoon here on 103.3 KUMD.